Hey everyone, Chris here, your favorite Mediocre Canucks podcaster, and I have a deal exclusive to the listeners of C4. Rocky Mountain Barber Company, a Canadian men's grooming company, has partnered with us to provide you a discount on some of the best men's grooming products on the market. They use fresh, natural ingredients, they provide a 100% satisfaction guarantee, and even offer freebies with every order. I've personally been using their sandalwood shaving cream for well over a year now, and I am blown away by the quality of the product, let alone the quality of the shave. Even my wife has commented on how smooth my face is after. Now, whether you live in Canada, the United States, or even the United Kingdom, Rocky Mountain Barber can get you their quality products without too much trouble. Simply head to rockymountainbarber.ca, take a look at their catalog, and when it comes time to check out, make sure to use the code LIGHTFORCE5. That's LIGHTFORCE with the number 5 to score yourself a 5% discount.
Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round-by-round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast. I am Chris at LightForce, joined virtually by Anna Forsythe at A4003, Matley at Matley underscore 61, continuing to remain unfit to podcast, but spoken about quite a bit on Instead of the Anthems, our pre-show exclusive to all of our patrons is Adam Ovenel Carter at Adam FOC. That's right. It is C4. You've been waiting 2 weeks to hear from us, unless you were a patron who chose to listen in and you got to hear Anna and I talk about music. But this is the first time you get to hear Matt in like almost a month. It's crazy. Or should I say Brad Isbister?
Yes. Today's former Canuck cult icon of the week, as we are going to now call it, Canuck cult icon. By the way, taking nominations as to who you want to see as the Canuck cult icon of the week for every episode. Every episode, we're going to have my name be a Canuck legend of sorts. You know, Tom Sestito, Tanner Glass.
Is Tom Sestito a legend?
Tom Sestito, by the way.
Have you not been on social media as of late?
Oh yeah, he's gone off the rails.
Okay, I was going to say, like,
honestly, he always had that capability. He was on the edge.
Regardless of who he is as a person, I'm saying this as a player first and foremost, like Jeff Cowan, like. Give me your nominations for who you want to see as the Canuck cult icon of the episode. By the way, is Todd Bertuzzi living in Vancouver yet?
Yeah, I see right back. What a lunatic.
We're not a podcast that gets too deep into politics, but a lot has changed since we last recorded an episode.
It feels a lot brighter in here than it did 2 weeks ago, I should say.
Literally brighter in Matt's case, because he's still in his dark cave of a room.
Yeah. Todd seemed to believe that Vancouver would be a place that he should come and live if Joe Biden were not to be elected the president of the United States. Joe Biden is currently the president-elect of the United States, albeit there seems to be some dispute on one side of the political spectrum about its validity. What was Todd thinking? Like, we just elected in our province a quote-unquote socialist government.
For the second time.
Well, I'm going to say time and a half, because they didn't get governed. You know what I mean. I know what you mean. But this is the thing, like...
As I said to someone over the weekend, we have our crazies and we get snooty in Canada, but we have so many crazies here. But Vancouver is a pretty liberal bubble.
Well, Vancouver specifically, yeah. Like, you like a look at the left coast. Well, we call ourselves the left coast and the left side of like the extreme left. But like when you compare the political spectrum from the United States to Canada,
It is like this, the political barometer adjusts itself.
There's so much that goes into that, but them having two parties is
just
like crazy idea. Anyway, we won't get too far down the line, but I just think there are so many people that just after their career, they can't take being out of the spotlight. So they put themselves in the spotlight, and it's not always a good thing for their reputation to remain in the spotlight.
This is true. Back on Canucks, though, not a whole lot's been going on in the world of the Orca. I mean, it's, let's be honest, there's still question marks as to whether or not the 2021 season will kick off on January 1st, as Gary Bettman had so hoped when the draft took place. But we are going to talk a little bit about the Vancouver Canucks, whether they're better or they're worse, and ultimately break things down across the team. There's some other odds and ends that we'll throw in and whatnot, but let's not take any further of your time waxing on politics. No, we instead are going to go and talk about the Canucks. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network. Off season so far, you know, I'm going to go and walk back a little bit here. I think in past episodes, in the moment, I myself felt the Vancouver Canucks had not done well, but having had an opportunity to breathe a little bit, while I might not be happy with all of the moves or non-moves, I'm not too upset.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I think this is a perfect time to sort of check in on your feelings as a Vancouver Canucks fan. And that's why we're sort of having this conversation, just because, like, time has sort of come and gone. You've had a chance to sort of look at the moves that were made by the Vancouver Canucks, the moves that were made by the rest of the NHL, and sort of take a longer look at the picture. And, like, I wanted to sort of gauge your guys' reactions and see if your guys' perspectives have changed. And in the case of Chris, and I'll let Chris speak furthermore on his point, his have changed. And Anna, how have your perspectives changed at all, or not really?
Not really. I mean, obviously, you're taking a beat and you're able to look at everyone else's off season. And has anyone got, like, markedly better? But I guess my problem is that we literally enriched one of our neighbors. Not just did they have a better off season than us, but their good off season came at our
expense.
What's the opposite of benefit? Expense. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You can do the maths, Wes. Good job. So yeah, that's hard to take. I don't know if it's changed. I never said it was a disaster, and I definitely don't think it's a disaster now. But it doesn't change for me that I think there was some missteps in there.
Chris, do you want to go with your thoughts? You mentioned, again, right off the hop, that you've had some time to think about it, and it's gone from being a maybe dumpster fire to a smoldering trash can fire at this point.
Well, so, like, I was, yes, you're probably in the, you're right, I was in sort of the dumpster fire camp. You know, if we think about better or worse, are the Vancouver Canucks better now than they were at the end of the season?
No,
they're not. I mean, I don't know anyone who can go and say they are. And if they are, like, to what parameter are you applying to make that statement? I mean, there's far too many, like, let's look up front. Let's break this down up front in the forward line. Where have the Vancouver Canucks gotten better?
They haven't. The clear in and out piece is Tyler Toffoli up front on the forward group. And losing Tyler Toffoli as a top six player clearly does not make your forward group better. It definitely makes it worse.
And then on top of that, you lost Tyler Toffoli light in Josh Levo for a cheap contract.
And I, you know, we talked about that in the last episode. Like, Josh Levo's departure was painful, but I'm willing to give the Vancouver Canucks a pass. Yes, he signed in Calgary for cheap. But if you think that Josh no longer has his game fine, but the Tyler Toffoli loss is the bigger one.
Oh, for sure.
I think in adding the equation together, like, what is it that we've heard quite consistently? Josh Levo said it, Toffoli's camp essentially said it, is that, well, we were wanting to be in Vancouver, but the team was too busy.
Yeah.
I'm paraphrasing.
I think that's the more frustrating thing, troubling thing, I think, is the lack of communication. And I think we mentioned this on the previous podcast, but yeah, I just think the soft skills, not that they're easy to get right, but like they're definitely not the most complex part of the job.
Yeah. The thing, though, as to why I temper this sort of fire, like what sort of put it out, the Vancouver Canucks were in a difficult cap position. And I mean, this is something that would be no surprise to anyone that's been following the team. We've been talking about this on this podcast for quite some time prior to even the sort of postseason that went on and everything that entailed in free agency and the draft. Vancouver Canucks were in a tough spot. We had presumed at one point that they were only going to bring back one of Tanev, Toffoli and Markstrom. They unfortunately brought back zero there, so that's a problem. But we had sort of come to the belief that Toffoli was likely the one that was going to go. So then I started rethinking this. I'm like, well, am I more upset about the zero there between the top three? And that's why it's a bad. Or is it that, you know, it's Toffoli? And I think it was the top, like the loss of the three, not the actual loss of Toffoli. I'm not happy that Toffoli's gone and there hasn't been this improvement. But, you know, looking at the forward line, it the loss of Toffoli does not make that team completely fall apart.
The other thing I was going to ask about this is how much does the fact that Tyler Toffoli really, in the grand scheme of things, played, eyeballing it, maybe 12 games as a Vancouver Canuck. He played a handful before or after the trade deadline, rather, and before the pause, but really only played about, by my count, three or four playoff games during the Canucks playoff run. You know, does that change anybody's opinion on how good of a player Tyler Toffoli was, or at least how important he was to the team? Because again, if you're playing the majority of your playoff games and having that success without Tyler Toffoli, are we overstating Tyler Toffoli's importance at all?
I do see what you're saying, and I don't want to go back on what I've said, because I think I had kind of resigned to losing Toffoli when we were in the pause there, and before we'd got going on playoffs, I kind of thought, you know, his 10 regular season games might be it for him, and he might go back to LA or move on somewhere else. And I don't want to overstate his importance, but I think if the playoffs showed us anything, it really showed us what a interesting and exciting team Canucks are, but what shallow depth they have.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think of those last few games against Vegas, like, honestly, the whole Vegas series, it was tenacious, but the offense dried up so quickly. And yeah, if it wasn't for that stellar performance by Demko, yeah, we wouldn't have got to game seven, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, going back to the trade deadline, I think it would have been fair to say everyone thought Toffoli was a rental. Like, the anger was not the Toffoli acquisition per se. It was that, why are the Canucks renting?
Yeah.
And then we have the pandemic.
Especially when it, like, okay, it's not their fault that the pandemic, but
didn't actually
move the needle having Tyler Toffoli. We're out of a playoff spot when the pandemic hit.
Yeah, you know, pandemic occurs and suddenly it's like, oh my goodness. You're right. Yeah, and at your point, like, we just rented a player that we're not going to get any value for. Postseason occurs. Vancouver Canucks get themselves in the play-in, get through, and suddenly, you know, Toffoli has a few games before he gets hurt. But I think what started to really move the needle as to why, you know, people became more upset about Toffoli was that he had actually said, I kind of want to stay in Vancouver. I really like it. I like what's going on here. And by all accounts, there was a deal to be had. Now, what did he sign for in Montreal? Well, I think that could have been done in Vancouver with a little creative math. It wasn't like the amount was obscene. The contract itself was a reasonable contract. There were no crazy ups or downs. In fact, Vancouver might have been able to make it a, you know, creative enough to make it work in a cash, you know, short environment. But in regardless, that ship sailed. So I think when I look up front, yes, the Vancouver Canucks did not get better. You can argue they are worse, but are they critically bad? No, because I think we'd already come to the realization when he was acquired, Toffoli is likely not going to be here next season.
Yeah, you're right. And the thing with me saying he didn't move the needle, I do think he improved the Canucks when he was on it in the regular season. I think he found some great chemistry playing with that top line. But yeah, Canucks just mainly their defense, but overall as a team, what they came to rely on was goaltending. So in that spot, Thatcher Demko was thrown into injured Markstrom's place both times in the like regular season and the playoffs. And that came to be the difference, and that Demko took a while to adjust in the regular season. So you're right in that there are other factors that may affect the team's performance more, but it doesn't change the fact that we have a gaping hole in our top six.
Yeah, true. But that's where I think the Canucks were going to have that regardless. Like how are they going to go and fill that hole in free agency? Like even if Toffoli wasn't a rental, let's say the Vancouver Canucks never actually acquired Toffoli. They're essentially in the same position they are today.
But it's just like we could have made it work for Toffoli Montreal money.
True.
But yeah, I guess what do we do with that spot?
Well, for sure. But let me, and again, you know what? I don't disagree with any of the points that are being made here, but let's say the Canucks find a way to move out the money needed to bring back Tyler Toffoli. Then you have Brock Besser and Tyler Toffoli occupying your top two right wing spots. Arguably, you have Jake Virtanen there. You could probably say it's a yes or no. But then you got Vasily Podkolzin coming up in the ranks as well. I mean, there's a lot of faces in the right wing slot and not a lot of spots available. I mean, where's the room for Tyler Toffoli, really, if you bring him back? I mean, sure, it's a huge stretch to put Jake Virtanen in your top six at right wing, but at some point, Vasily Podkolzin is earmarked for a top six right winger spot.
You're right, but I do think him making the team would be a stretch. I do think they want to get him to North America and out of the KHL. And monitor his development a bit more, but unless the AHL season gets cancelled, I really don't see him pushing for a spot like on the team just yet.
You think so?
I mean, he could, but I don't think he's going to be occupying a top six spot right away.
Fair enough. Yep. No, you're probably right.
There would be space in the bottom six for him. And if you have to push Jake Virtanen down, then like that's a good problem to have.
Well, you say he's not going to fit into the top six, but out of necessity, might he? Because I mean, we've seen the Vancouver Canucks in a position before where players who you would not argue fit in the top six find themselves there on a regular basis without injury requiring it.
Unless we can find a really, really cheap top six replacement like Josh Levo had the potential. Mm-hmm. Then yeah, it's going to be Jake or Louis really that we're looking at right now.
And regardless of potential or finding someone right now, the Vancouver Canucks are in, you know, cap trouble. Right? They're all TIRing it for the moment. Unless
actually,
something
didn't you hear we won the cap situation by a lot.
Oh, we did. Must have been all that fake cap.
Mm-hmm. Stop counting the salary for the cap for yeah, Louis Erickson.
Stop
counting
count.
Louis Erickson's salary.
Let's move on to the blue line. So the blue line, there's been a lot of consternation, and that was because I don't think anyone in their mother thought Chris Tanev would not be a Vancouver Canuck. There was some worry about Markstrom. Oh, I don't know if we're gonna be able to afford Markstrom. The thought was Toffoli, he was just a rental. But good old reliable Chris Tanev, he'd be patrolling the blue line and helping Quinn Hughes become a better hockey player for years to come. That is not happening. Now, instead, the Vancouver Canucks went and found themselves a very, you know, reliable defenseman in Nate Schmidt. Granted, probably could have got him for a better deal than they did. You know, there is some argument to be had there. But when you think about it, Nate Schmidt on the blue line isn't bad in my mind. Yeah, okay, you were paying three defensemen $6 million essentially, you know, next season. But Edler comes off the books after that. I can't imagine Edler is going to be back in Vancouver unless he comes back like dirt cheap. You've got Nate Schmidt and Myers, essentially your top two. Now, the argument that might be made is, well, wait a minute, you know, Quinn's going to need to get paid. Yeah, but Quinn's, do you foresee Quinn getting $6 million next season? Or not, you know, season next? I don't think so. Right? So, I mean,
more
he's going to get
less.
Well, I think he's getting less, but I think, you know, he's getting like more than he is now. Like, there's going to be that considerable increase, yeah. But I don't see him, like, if the Canucks get him for that number, like, he would have had, like, this next season, whenever that might be, he'd have to be, like, lights out.
Have we not seen Quinn Hughes highlights in a while?
Well, no, but so, like, but this is the thing, sophomore players, which Quinn will become, don't always perform the, you know, the extent that they have in their...
Question. To be fair, Quinn Hughes is not like most sophomore players.
No, we hope not, and I don't think he is, but I'm not going to go and start, you know, handing out meal ticket contracts to a young kid who, quite frankly, doesn't have too much, you know, room to negotiate. Now, he's not, you know, black hole free agent to like Gaudette was, where he has absolutely no, you know, position of strength to negotiate from.
I mean,
but if for the Canucks to lock him up at that amount of money, look, let's actually think about that. If the Vancouver Canucks are going to go and lock him up at that much money, that means that they're also going for term. Are they not? And that would then lead me to think that they're like, oh my goodness, we can't let Wayne Gretzky go.
Well, for the record, and this could be a discussion a whole other day, is I do think that Pettersson and Quinn Hughes are taking bridge contracts after this upcoming season, whenever that might be. Just given the flat cap and the uncertainty with, you know, contracts and stuff like that. I think the more I think about it, the more I'm starting to believe that the likeliest outcome for those two players is to take bridge contracts, to bet on themselves, and to bet on the NHL recovering financially to the point where the salary cap increases and they're getting potentially double digit per year salaries.
Yeah. I agree. What was it? The original... I feel blue like we started.
Well, we were talking at the end of the day. Was the blue line better or worse now than it was at the end of last season?
I mean, it's worse, obviously.
Really?
Is it?
I see. That's the thing is, I don't think it is. I think
this
better.
Is the one area that got better over the offseason.
Okay, here's my thing. I didn't want to pay Chris Tanev that contract. If he's going to sign that contract, I'm okay with letting him go. Nate Schmidt, really good acquisition. My problem is that we're left with the same issue that we have in the forward group, is that lack of depth. How do we fill up? Like, I think we were talking about a couple months ago, a Utica player making the jump. Now we're just betting on at least one Utica player making the jump so we can get a bargain bottom pairing.
Well, not just one. You're looking at possibly two Utica players making that jump into the bottom pairing. I mean, we'll talk about it a little bit later, but like Ulielevi, Brogan Rafferty, we were thinking one of those guys would be able to make the jump full time. Now you're looking at a situation where you might need both of them to make the jump full time.
Exactly. That's kind of my point. I think we've got some really good players in this top two pairings, but without Troy Stetcher, who was like a good fill-in up the lineup at a cheap contract, and yeah, obviously we've lost a lot of strength with Chris Tanev, but yeah, like considering the season he had, he would have, you know, he wouldn't have made it through a full season if there was a full season. So, yeah, I'm okay with letting him go, but I just think if we're looking at the defensive unit as a whole, we're looking at the weakness at the bottom again.
Okay, so but this then see this is where I don't disagree. You're right. There is a if we're looking at the blue line as a whole, there is a hole, like a literal hole that mm-hmm. needs to be filled. But if we think about the cumulative competency of players, Nate Schmidt, in my mind, is a superior defenseman compared to Chris Tanev. That is not a knock against Chris Tanev. It's simply I feel Nate Schmidt provides more than Tanev did. Now, Tanev and Stetcher, I'm, you know, that's where I'm now start to wonder. I think Schmidt's maybe at best a wash between those two. But the problem is the two means there is this physical hole. So I'll give you that. There is this physical hole. I just wonder if maybe there's an opportunity to actually give a Utica player a chance to say, hey, here's this, you know, you'll play. We have a group of you. One of you is going to, you know, be the person to get that spot. We're going to try y'all out. But someone's going to get that spot. That type of competition, I think, does bode well. If it doesn't work out, you know what? This next season is kind of going to be a wash season. We've already discussed that in the last episode. So why not have that tryout? I mean, it's Canucks Idol.
I mean, Blue yeah, I really think has the potential to be one of the most exciting camps in a long time. Yeah, with, you know, a top six spot potentially up for grabs, plus at least one roster spot for a Utica D-man, maybe two. I think you're right. The potential is big, but you have to say that, like, the question was, has the blue line as a whole got weaker or stronger? And I'm still on the weak side.
No, it's not weaker or stronger. It's better or worse.
I feel better or worse. Better. Okay, I still think it's worse, get it right, but Anna. It has the potential to be better. You're right. Like, if these Utica players make the jump, like, if Brogan Rafferty is the offensive defenseman he's cracked out to be and filled, you know, some of the holes in his game in the neutral zone and the turnovers, you know, he had a rough camp, but he has so much potential. So yeah, it has potential to be better, but it's not.
Okay, so I'm gonna throw this back at you. If Vancouver Canucks had brought back Tanev and Stetcher,
is the Canucks I would have been mad.
Better or worse?
I'm not gonna lie. If you think about it,
I'm not asking whether you're happy or mad. I'm asking, is it better or worse?
If we had rolled back over here, it's a tiny bit worse because Chris Tanev is a year older.
Yeah, it's the depreciation return. And that's sort of where I think that's why I'm seeing better is we've gotten rid of the depreciating return through an improvement. But that's fine. Matt, you wanted to say something?
I was going to say that I agree with you, Chris. It's like, let's not, like, we will never say a bad thing about Chris Tanev, like, as a person, as someone who is respected in the room, etc. But here's the harsh reality about Chris Tanev's game. When Chris Tanev is out there, the Vancouver Canucks are chasing the puck an awful lot in their own zone. His game is built on smart stick play and shot blocks. Chris Tanev, for the most part, is a smart, like, safe pass, get it out of the zone type of player. But he's never been a possession player, and he's only getting worse. The fact that Chris Tanev played an entire season without missing any games due to injury is probably a half miracle. What the Canucks are getting in Nate Schmidt is a guy who can actually drive play on his own. And yeah, the price tag to pay Nate Schmidt his $6 million salary, not ideal. Nor is the third round pick that you're giving up for him ideal, really. But in Chris's, and to Chris's point, this is a calculated risk on the Canucks' part that they are getting a player who makes them better now and for the next few years compared to Chris Tanev, who, as Chris said, was a depreciating asset.
Yeah, and I did just look up Nate Schmidt's injury history to have a good idea of where he was at. He has a good history of getting injured in the summer, which I have a feeling isn't him getting injured in the summer, but more playing through injury until the summer.
Yeah. I was going to say, is he getting snake bit on the golf course? Because then I'd be worried.
Yeah, although he did... Yeah,
no crackers for ago, you, Nate Schmidt.
He did break a fibula in August, so one time. So that is worrying. But maybe stay off the golf course. But overall, yeah. I don't think anyone has the same injury history as Chris Tanev.
So the last position on the ice before we take ourselves a short break is the one in the crease.
Yeah.
I mean, which one of us is going to say that that got better?
Well, I don't think any of us here are going to say it got better, but this might be a hot take. I don't think it got as worse as it was portrayed to be in the first few weeks of the offseason. Sure, you're losing Jacob Markstrom, who turned in what probably was, in all fairness, a Vezina-worthy type of season. I want to bet great money, first of all, that Jacob Markstrom is not going to be able to replicate that for the rest of his career. What we saw last season is peak Jacob Markstrom, and I will be shocked if we see anything come close to that next season or in any season after that. Braden Holtby is a clear downgrade from Jacob Markstrom. Is he as significant as a downgrade? I don't know. I kind of want to see what Ian Clark can do with a full season or two of Braden Holtby. And if you're assuming that Thatcher Demko's improvement is linear, maybe it doesn't make up the complete loss of Jacob Markstrom, but I think it does a huge part to at least mitigate the loss of Jacob Markstrom.
I mean, I didn't, much like with Tanev, I didn't want to sign that Markstrom contract. I'm glad we didn't. I think Demko has a lot of potential. I think he was slow in his development, but it's increased exponentially recently. I think he has a lot of issues still, but I do think he's very responsive to Ian Clark. He's a very good pupil from that perspective. I just didn't want to get carried away with him facing off against one opponent. Under a great deal of pressure, don't get me wrong. But with a team that played better ahead of him than Jacob's Markstrom's decor ever did. But yes, I think patience is the key with Demko for sure. And yeah, maybe this takes a season, but I do think he's in a really good position with Holtby as a mentor, with Ian Clark guiding him. I don't know if Holtby will be as receptive to Ian Clark's methodology at the point of his career he's at, but I do think he's a good person to push Demko.
I actually wonder about that. Yeah, you're right. I think a lot of it comes down to, where does Holtby view himself in his career? Like, him coming to Vancouver, I think he clearly understands that he is the, you know, ship that is simply getting the Vancouver Canucks to their next destination, that being Thatcher Demko. However, if he wants to go and show his next team that he has still got some gas in the tank, I actually wonder if he views sort of Vancouver and the opportunity to show that he can sort of not reinvent his game, but find it, because we're, what, two seasons away from, like, superior play in the NHL. And even last season, even though his statistics weren't so hot, Washington has simply let every puck that was possible come his way, and he still stopped a metric ton of them. So if he can do that in Vancouver, because he'll have to, let's be honest, we just talked about the blue line. The blue line's not stopping more pucks than it did last year. But Ian Clark helps sort of refine that game so he can stop more of them. That's good for him. That's good in his next team, whether it be Seattle, if he gets picked up in an expansion draft, or the subsequent team down the road. Or if the Thatcher Demko opportunity doesn't play out, maybe he stays in Vancouver. Maybe he stays beyond the 2 years, and Thatcher becomes an asset that can be bounced somewhere else, like a Schneider for a Horvat, which, you know, at the time, people were like, oh my goodness, but hey.
It worked out okay.
Yeah, I hear this Horvat kid's not that bad. We're going to take ourselves a short break. You are listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com and the Full Press Coverage Network.
Take hitting out of the game. You can't hit anymore, so don't do it.
The unsportsmanlike conduct, I want to get an explanation on that.
No kidding.
Because how do you get suspended for unsportsmanlike conduct?
Plus interference. There's no interference there. He had the puck.
Now, Madison never ever did that before. Now, why did he do it? Is that because he was mad?
Well, your early favorite for the Calder Trophy, that's for sure. Elias Pettersson, you might even say your early favorite for the Hart Trophy. Just to get back to your question, Elias is going to play plenty. He can play. He's going to get a lot of power play time. And yeah, I'm concerned about our offense. We lost 200-point players, and we've got to find a way to score.
We just talked about the better or worse forward, defense, goaltending. But let's actually talk about the future. Which players, and we're talking about the kids here, which kid
Facility Pod Colton
faces the most pressure for the 2021-22 season? Well,
Pod
chooses to play.
Picked someone not on his own list.
Well, I was going to say, Pod Colson wasn't on the list, but he probably would be facing a lot of pressure when he comes in, too, at the same time. Sorry, what was the list, Chris?
The list is Virtanen, Jalevi, and Demko, which works out well because you have a forward, a defender, and a goaltender.
Wow. What a great producer to have odds of that happening.
So well planned.
My first nomination would probably be Jake Virtanen, because I think anytime you're pigeonholing him for a potential top six spot in the absence of Tyler Toffoli, there's going to be an enormous amount of pressure. And not just because of the circumstances, but because of Virtanen as a player. You know, a 2-year deal, avoiding arbitration is great, but you get the sense that this is potentially the last contract that Jake Virtanen could get with the Vancouver Canucks if he does not show some significant improvement.
True. I mean, yeah, I think Jake's under a huge amount of pressure, and he kind of has been for a while, not so much in the spotlight, but we've often seen him crumble under pressure, and now he's got another season with a coach who doesn't like him very much, but might have to play him anyways. In a town where every single move is scrutinized. And yeah. So it's tough for Jake Virtanen, but he's also going to be put in the best spot to succeed. He could earn himself a top six spot. Like, that's wide open for him. He needs to, if he steps up, that's his.
So Matt will get this reference, as will a few of our listeners, and you might well get it as well. The fact that you just talked about Jake Virtanen and is coming back to a coach that doesn't like him reminded me of another young player, Charlie Conway, who found himself on a team with a coach that he felt did not like him in Coach Orion. But really, Coach Orion liked Charlie Conway, as you know, Matt tries not to die here. And once Charlie came to understand that he needed to mature as a player, Charlie then found a way to not only redo his game, but understand what Coach Orion was trying to do. And as a result, I wonder if maybe Jake Virtanen is in that point in his career that Charlie Conway was when he went to the Eden Hall Academy.
Yeah, that's from the Mighty Ducks, isn't it? Yep.
Oh, God.
Stupid. I
drank water and I laughed when Chris tried to compare Jake Virtanen to Charlie Conway. It was great.
But you think about that, right? Like that. I mean, I know I'm talking about the movie, but that situation's something different. Like, you had a player that really did, you know, had his way, starts, you know, doing his thing, being really resistant, and then comes around. I wonder if Jake Virtanen were to come around, I mean, which we all want him to do. Like, Hercules, he always calls us out when we and others take shots at Virtanen. I won't speak for anyone else, but I'm pretty sure the three of us want Virtanen to succeed. Why? Because a successful Virtanen is a successful Vancouver Canucks team.
Oh, yeah, big time, especially given, as we talked about, Black Hole top six. If Jake Virtanen can succeed this year and do something with that top six spot, like, you would find three happy podcasters here, for sure. We are rooting for him. Jake, we are rooting for you. Just don't let us down, please.
You know. While we're sort of looking at this list, like, Jalevi, like, what pressure is he truly under? I mean, he is at the point of his career where if he wants to break this roster, this is the opportunity to do it.
Well, I mean, that's just it, isn't it?
Yeah, but that's what I think. He's not necessarily under pressure in the fact that if he doesn't perform, Canucks have no options. But, like, considering his injury history, he's really at a prove himself point.
Yeah, but I don't, like, I mean, I guess that is pressure. Like, he's at the point of his career where he needs to, this is it. Like, this is the opportunity. Like, Jake, it's a different type of pressure, I guess maybe is what I'm saying. But, you know, I think Ylevi still has a life or two left, whereas, like, Jake, he's out of lies. Like, this cat, unfortunately, has to deal with, you know, the four legs that he's got. I'm just running this metaphor dead here. But I to me, it's a different type of pressure. And it's not to it's the same, different. Like, strength of pressure for tennis. Demko, I feel, has no pressure. He's got a Holtby in front of him.
I'm not saying, I don't think Demko has no pressure, but I don't think there's the onus on him to succeed in the same way that Markstrom did. There's enough of a clear out in the blue line too that, you know, people will realize what Markstrom, if they didn't already, what Markstrom gave to the Canucks and kind of see what support a goaltender needs to succeed. But yeah, I think I get Matt's point on Ylevi because people already think of him as a bust. And in a way, he is a bust. Like, for his draft position, he hasn't succeeded in the way that would signify. And I just think Canucks fans are so ready to write him off and his whole career if he doesn't show up in camp, you know?
But that, you know, but to me, okay, maybe there's some personal pressure there, but the bar is so low right now. Like, expectations aren't there. Ylevi could be an okay defenseman, and I think expectations have it as like, oh, that's a win. Vertanen can't show up and be an okay forward. Like, expectations for him are much higher, and yet you'd think if he could just show up and be consistent and okay, would we be happy? I would like to think we would, but I don't think we will. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I get what you're saying in that, like, people, like, Jake is on, you know, his last letter in horse. He's got to make the shot and make it count.
It's a much better analogy than what I was.
Yeah, that was much better.
But Ylevi, it's more from a career standpoint and personal pressure in that he could very easily get forgotten. Mm-hmm. If he doesn't succeed now, that's my point, and I think Matt's point. But there's far more eyes and there's far more onus on Jake to really step up.
Yeah.
I was going to say on the topic. No, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, well, more I think about this. Yeah, I don't know. Go ahead. I've lost my thought. I'm an old man.
Obviously, the pressure's on Thatcher Demko here.
Oh, yeah, totally.
No, you know what? I mean, in the end of the day, I think we have the pressure ranked as it should be for Tannen, Ylevi, and Demko in that order. If Demko falters, you do still have Braden Holtby to fall back on. Sorry, you were going to say?
Like, I wouldn't, not like with Demko, it's on a three-person list, I place him fourth. If we're thinking about pressure, like, I just... Well, no, that's the thing. It's like I said, on a three-person list, I'm placing him fourth. That's sort of how I feel sort of the pressure should be allocated. Vertanen, Ylevi, Demko.
Oh, Chris is trying to rewrite the rules.
So Demko's not even on the list is what you're saying.
Well, if he makes it, it's just because there is some pressure he needs to be. But, like, goaltenders take a lot longer to mature, to what Anna had pointed out earlier. There is we need more. Like, it's not like Demko had an opportunity and failed to take it, right? He was given an opportunity, and arguably he took it, which is why we're having this conversation.
Yeah.
So, you know, I just... He's got more to work with than the other two do. For different reasons, those other two are on this list.
I'm just going to make a very quick reference that only Trev Goldie will get. But Jake Virtanen is the Canucks' Joe Denley. He's failed upwards into position of power, and now it's like he's batting for his life. He has to face 100 balls or... he'll lose his contract. Now, that won't make sense to anyone, but...
I'm dropping the Mighty Ducks references that I would say a lot of people get. Nana's dropping the cricket reference that...
I don't get that reference.
Yeah. Jessica might get it, too. I know
Jessica will get it.
Yeah. I didn't get Chris's reference.
Whatever. You were spitting water out of your nose.
Can I just say, like, that terrible movie, not only was I forced to watch the trilogy of it, but I got this great hoodie in the mail the other day from Bring Hockey Back and designed by Taylor Sterner. It says Women Belong in Sports. It's a really neat hoodie, but they also sent me two stickers and they were of Miracle and Mighty Ducks because those terrible movies continue to follow me around.
Wow. You just name like the best movies.
Well, no, I was going to say Mystery Alaska.
Mystery Alaska is the best hockey movie. Yeah, like me.
Mystery Alaska. I mean, I would have told you it would have been Slapshot for the longest time. Now I'm thinking Mystery Alaska sort of knocks Slapshot down. A little bit off the rails here. Only
like we went already careering down the cliffside.
Saved by the Bell has a reboot.
I saw that.
And it's like the original cast got older and their kids are going to Bayside or something anyhow.
Yeah, that was honestly like
Screech isn't in it, but he has some issues he has to sort out. I think he might be incarcerated right now, or if he isn't, he may have to stay close to home.
Saved by the Bell was not like the greatest show, but you kind of watched it just almost because it was terrible.
Mm-hmm. I just, you know, when Zach and Kelly finally got together and then they went to get married and they had this sort of made for TV movies, next level stuff.
What is happening?
Also off the rails.
I didn't realize that.
There was it's an actual sports show on TV. Fox had it. It was about baseball. A woman that was signed for by the, I think it was the San Diego Padres was the fictional team to pitch for them. And Mark Paul Gosselaar was in, he was the catcher. Essentially, oh, Zach God.
What
baseball.
Movie is this? It sounds
called,
so familiar.
It was a TV show. It was
is
called
this
Pitch.
Pitch, yeah. Pitch.
It was a really,
I've
I feel
heard
it was
really
good.
It got
solid ratings, and then
it got canceled, yeah.
Fox canceled it, yeah.
I want to see that. By the way, your favorite, what's it called? Ted Lasso is getting a lot of love in the UK right now.
Because
everyone hated that advert so much. It was so terrible. And then they're actually saying, oh, but it looks bad, but it's actually so good.
Oh, it is. Like, seriously, Matt, do yourself a favor. Watch Ted Lasso.
It's on my list. All right. I just started Sunderland Till I Die, though. So that's my sports show right now. Anyway.
Back on topic.
Back on track.
It's not on the list, but Matt shared it in C4 Discord earlier today. The Vancouver Canucks let a couple staff members in their PR department go. Thought is this is related to the pandemic, which, first of all, I know a lot of people are going through some tough times and decisions are being made that affect, you know, probably some of our listeners where they're losing their jobs. So I feel for you. My wife had lost her job for a few months before she went back into a different role. But a follow-up question was asked of PJ, friend of the show, Patrick Johnston, and he had said that based on the conversations he had, is that on the non-hockey operations side of the team, there was an expectation that only 25% of people would remain, if I was reading that tweet correctly, 50 out of 200?
Well,
or was that 50 out of 200 being let go? Like, but and he said that now though it might be worse. Like that's a lot of people. We already know Derek Jory is not there.
Yeah, from my like people I talked to who work for the Canucks, I wouldn't be shocked if that was accurate. If not, yeah, as PJ said, worse.
Yeah,
I
know the Canucks aren't the only team going through, you know, situations such as this, but it's tough. Like
it's tough, you know, when you see like that when you know that your owner's net worth. I'm not saying there should be an endless reserve of cash to give to the staff, but when you see it like getting gutted like that, it's tough.
You know, long-time listeners of the podcast will know that there is this thought that the Vancouver Canucks are a cash-poor team. And what I mean by that, it's not that they don't have ownership support to spend to the cap and to invest money in the team. It's that they're very much able to spend the money they bring in. So if there's gate revenue, there's concession revenue, there's merchandise revenue, TV and all that, they have almost like the ability to spend. The problem is when those revenue sources dry up, there's no like money saved in the bank for a rainy day fund.
Yeah. There never seems to be when the money's coming in, the revenue is good and everyone sort of benefits. But I think when hard times fall, it falls pretty hard across the organization. At least that seems to be the belief. We don't have anything to sort of back that up, but it seems to be like the long held belief has been, if you go back to the 90s, when the Canucks were even under previous ownership, that it would be very tough anywhere to be employed there.
Okay. Yeah. But that owner back then wasn't spend like they weren't a cap team or the, yeah. There was a cap, but like that, you know, that was
but they weren't competitive either though.
No, but it was a nickel and dime operation. Like the investment was whatever needs to be done to put enough players on the ice and keep the lights on and potentially get a bum or two in a seat. Mm-hmm. The thing though, that I look back to is that NHL work stoppages under this current ownership group, I think are indicative of what have happened. So when the NHL work stoppage happened, how many years ago now? Was it 8 at the top of my head?
The 2013 one?
Yeah, so 7. Yeah. Vancouver Canucks staff were essentially put on reduced salary. Like they were, I mean, you might say, well, there's nothing going on. You're right, but that's because, again, the rainy day fund doesn't exist. Here is an owner who kind of knows it's going to happen. Like if the owner doesn't, then I would kind of argue you weren't paying close enough attention. If there's one thing that the family is not accused of is not being like hands-on with Vancouver Canucks. So, but it is what it is. It's just a tough thing to watch.
Yeah.
You know, people that we know have to experience. And I know it's not just the Vancouver Canucks. There's a lot of people that we know, listeners included, who are running into a situation that the pandemic is impacting your ability to stay employed. So please understand, you know, I bring this up only because I do believe that some people may not think about a team like the Canucks because the perception is, oh, the Canucks have owners and the owner's not making money. Boo hoo. Well, the problem is it's not the owners. It's the people the owner employs and what happens to them. Any other quick hits that we wanted to touch on before we look to wrap up this episode?
Vasily Podkolzin is good at hockey.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to attempt how to say this tournament? Matt, like, take a run at the Cup? Is it Corolla?
I don't know. That's my guess.
Okay.
The Toyota Corolla.
Kahala, maybe? That sounds really, like, Swedish, eh?
Anyway, it's long perceived to be a tune-up for the World Junior Championships. Vasily Podkolzin was the captain of Team Russia in this case. Had a great showing, played a lot of minutes, was entrusted in a lot of situations by the coach of the Russia team, Igor Larionov, former Vancouver Canuck. If it's a harbinger of what the World Juniors are going to be, Vasily Podkolzin is going to have a very, very good tournament in December, January.
Yeah. As any of you that follow friend of the show, Cam Robinson, already aware that like he had a beautiful, filthy, super smooth shootout winner against Sweden in that. And yep, ended up with 5 points, 3 games. Like, it's such a short tournament, but as Matt said, using his fancy words, his $10 words, could be a harbinger of things to come.
You like that, huh?
See, we're being optimistic.
He's reading his thesaurus again.
Yeah, well,
word of the day, toilet paper.
His head sort of changes direction, looks to the side like he is reading something. It probably is like a thesaurus he's flipping through. Either that or a dictionary to understand these English words we use.
Yeah, he's Googling every other word.
Yeah,
true. So
very acrimonious statement coming from you there, Anna.
Oh, wow. Seriously, do you have word of the day toilet paper?
No, I don't. I really should.
Word of the day calendar? But
I have to ask, word of the day toilet paper, like how does that work? You use one square per day?
You have to go through one square awkward. At a time.
That'd yeah, I guess
you sort of scroll maybe that's as, space you, to pop- as you pull.
Maybe they're spaced apart. And if you have a like particularly troublesome day, you might go through two words of the day.
Okay, I don't know. This conversation's kind of got weird. I was going to actually go and talk a little bit about hockey and whether or not you, the two of you, know what's going on down in Seattle. Anything going on down in Seattle that you're aware of?
I hear they're getting a team there. Those are the rumblings beneath the waters.
My spidey tentacles are tingly.
Well, the thing about the Seattle Kraken, which is the name of this team down the highway from us, Highway 99 or I-5, depending on your perspective, is that they're getting a hockey team. There's some buzz. There's an arena being built. And us at C4 don't know a whole lot about what the hockey scene is like, specifically the NHL franchise they now have. So we figured, why not get ourselves a special guest in an episode to talk a little bit about the sound of hockey down in Seattle. And that's right. We have John Barr, one of the voices of the Sound of Hockey podcast, lined up to join us next episode to fill us in on all the details. So if you happen to be curious about the Seattle Kraken, you'll want to listen to next episode. I was about to say next week, but it's actually in 2 weeks' time.
That's a good name for a podcast, I have to say.
Oh, I thought so too. I mean, I believe it was formerly known as NHL to Seattle, because at the time that was like the NHL's going to go to Seattle. And if you go to their website, it's nhltoseattle.com. But John had mentioned that they're going to go through a transition, and that again kind of makes sense. But they are known as the Sound of Hockey podcast. And John's going to join us and talk a little bit about, what's going on down in Seattle. Cool thing about the podcast, like we talk about sort of ownership as sort of being this group of people, you know, somewhere above. John's actually spoken to ownership of the Kraken. So,
I mean, accessible.
Yeah. Obviously, completely different market, completely different team. But I'm going to be a little honest here. I'm just a bit jealous.
Yeah. I will say, that's exciting. I wonder if, because they got a good name, but they had a do-over. Like, we need an expansion draft for podcast names, and we can take it back.
So when the Vancouver Canucks, you know, rebrand to the Vancouver something or others, we'll do that too?
Well, I guess
we'll no longer be C4?
Yeah.
We'll be the something or other podcast.
You know, honestly, I'm going to, you know, sell the secret sauce here. If we had to rename, I'd totally call us the Best Mediocre Canucks Podcast.
No, that's too long.
Well, what would you want to rename us to?
I don't know. It's hard to say because you kind of love what you have, but yeah.
Told you already. It's pulling the Orland curtain back.
Oh, yeah.
That's okay. That was going to be a segment. And again, our patrons who turned into our pre-show instead of the anthems, they already knew about this segment idea that Matt had. That's
going to be an upcoming segment.
Guaranteed, one of the thousand other Canucks podcasts out there is going to have their own segment called Pulling the Orland Curtain Back. But here we are wrapping up another solid episode of C4. You'll find us back again in 2 weeks' time for the main show. If you happen to be a patron of ours, remember, tune in to Instead of the Anthems before we click record, where you get to hear Matt, Anna, and I wax wonderful about who knows what and what knows when. Like, I kid you not, there is absolutely no plan. We hit record, we say hello, and whatever's on our mind, we chat about. Hey, maybe we'll talk about our favorite landscaping company.
Four Seasons? Total
Yeah,
Land?
No, I know what that, mine is.
Maybe that's my favorite hotel. I don't know. But if you happen to be a patron at the listening in or above level, you're going to get C4 Off the Rails next week. So again, patrons listening in above, they get weekly content. Everyone else, we're down to the bi-weekly until such time as the NHL gives us an idea as to when a return to hockey will occur. But as we look to wrap the episode up, Matt, what final and wonderful words of wisdom do you wish to share?
I don't think we'll get any clarity on the NHL season starting anytime between now and 2 weeks from now, but the word is that players are going to start arriving back in North America within the next little bit in preparation of a supposed season. So I don't know, something new to look forward to, I guess, over the next coming months.
How about you, Anna?
Yeah. We talked a lot about Jake this episode. I know the stories are coming in from Kelowna that he's got a new dad. He's moved on from Chris Tanev. Tyler Myers is his new dad. So hopefully we'll come back to a disciplined, like absolutely ripped Jake, and he'll be raring to go.
Every off season at this point.
I know, but this time it's different. I don't know why yet.
I've changed. Trust me, I've changed. As for me, no, just yeah, keep on staying safe, everyone. Stay healthy. For those of you who are getting worried, trust me, I feel you. I'm myself concerned, worried, stressed, anxious. This will all eventually pass. We just need to, remain calm. We got to stay safe and, continue to listen to C4. Have some fun once in a while. If you do want to have fun and get on all the wacky conversation that take place in Discord, you want to go to discord.io/C4podcast. Join us in Gate 16. You can hang out, have conversations. It's been quiet as of late, which is interesting because for a while there, Beta Canuck and Jay were essentially lighting a fire every day, which is good fun. I enjoy, the back and forth. I know that the two of them may at times feel maybe not the same way, but there isn't anything wrong with, opposing opinions. It's just understanding that it's perfectly okay and that an opinion does not mean you are wrong, nor does it mean you are right. Unless you're standing in front of a place of business between a bookstore and a place to go to the great beyond. But yeah, if you look to tune in for future episodes, you reach this point, c4podcast.com will show you our entire back catalog, but hit subscribe and whatever podcatcher you happen to be listening to the podcast on. That'll just make it a whole lot easier. And if you're really curious, like what is this Patreon stuff they're talking about? Go to patreon.com/c4podcast. You'll see how you can access Instead of the Anthems as all patrons do, how you get access to patron chat and Discord as all patrons do, and all the different tiers that provide you various different levels of access, including those at the $5 a month and up who get to listen to our patron only show Off the Rails. So on behalf of the currently unfit to podcast, Adam Lacard, Adam FOC, Matt Lee at Matt_Lee_61, Anna Forsythe at E4603, myself, Chris at Lightforce, we out.